I now have a special interview with not a local person. Meg is from the Wisconsin area near Madison. We've been talking for a little while now, and I think many listeners will be interested to hear some of the things she has to say. Thank you so much, Meg, for being with us this morning.
Well, it's an honor to be there and to talk about some of the things that are near and dear to my heart.
Absolutely. Yes. Now, let's just start a little bit by the way you and I were connected was originally through the Climate Land Leaders. Tell us a little bit about the Climate Land Leaders and how you became involved with that.
Okay, sure. We have been in with Climate Land Leaders since it was an initiative of Sharing Our Roots, which was formerly Main Street Project out of Northfield, Minnesota. And we got connected through them. Connections and relationships are always so important, but we got connected with them through Savannah Institute. And when the whole world was shutting down in March of 2020, there were about 20 of us who were interested in becoming part of this new initiative. And we were supposed to meet in person, but we ended up meeting as a Zoom call. And we have been members ever since. It's been a group that has been just invaluable to us as we have been trying to transition from corn and soybeans on our 115 acres in southern Minnesota to something more diversified, to grazing, to keeping animals. We were just delighted when we came on that first call, and here were 20 other like-minded people that we didn't even know had existed before, people who had been doing what we wanted to do and who wanted to do what we wanted to do and didn't know how to do it.
Right.
I mean, we're not farmers. I'm a church lady. I'm a deacon in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And I love the farm, and I always felt connected to our family farm in Minnesota. But I didn't have any idea where to start or how to change the way farming was done on our land.
Yes, strength really is in numbers, and it's just amazing how things can change when you suddenly have 20 others with the same interest in mind. It's a really neat story to show that it doesn't take anything terribly, terribly dramatic, but just hooking people up with each other is an important step. And then did you grow up in southern Minnesota on this farm, or how are you connected to the land in Minnesota?
Yes, that is our family farm in Minnesota. My great-grandfather purchased it in 1903, and it's been in our family ever since. My grandpa farmed, my dad farmed. We grew up there, my sister and I. And when our parents passed away, we split the tillable land into two portions, and we still own the homestead part with the house and the barns and everything. You know, together, we hold that together. Yeah, so we were interested in doing different things with our part. And when we realized we could do that, it was an enlightenment. And it's been a great journey ever since.
Yeah, I would imagine that really it's all about your relationship with the farmer who is working the land.
Yeah, it really is. That has a lot to do with it. And our farmer who was doing the corn and soybeans rental, we brought him in early on, and we said, well, these are some of the things we'd like to do. You know, we'd like to put some land into pasture, and we'd like to grow some more diversified crops, and maybe down the road, you know, we'll have to get into this, but we'd have to stop using herbicides and pesticides, and you'd have to do no-till and cover crops. And he's like, well, you know, it's your land. You can do what you want with it.
Uh-huh.
But it was pretty clear that he wasn't interested in doing that. He likes his big tractors, and he likes his air-conditioned cab.
Yeah.
And he's got his way of farming, and that's worked out well for him.
Yep.
So he's set in his ways. And I can't tell him how to farm what he's farming, but I can tell him how I want to farm, you know.
Right. So what happened next?
Well, so then we decided we would take 50 acres from the land that he farmed, from our 115, and put it into grazing. And through this amazing connection, we found from our son, who lives in New York City, we learned about this local farmer who raises grass-fed beef and sheep and hogs. And I'll call anybody and ask him anything, because there was a time when I worked in public relations. And so I called him up one time and I said, you know, would you be interested in working with us? And he thought he had died and gone to heaven, I think, because he was so glad,
wow.
you know, to hear that there was somebody out there that wanted to do what he wanted to do. And so in for the last couple of years, he's planted, you know, grasses and forbs and small grains on that 50 acres, and he's working towards, hopefully this fall, putting his about 40 head of sheep on there in a rotational basis.
Wait, and did he happen to just live nearby?
Yes, that was the funny thing. Our son in New York was Googling to see, you know, well, is there anybody out there that does what you want to do? And
yeah.
And he said, well, I found this guy. And he said, how far away is Hayward from your farm? And we said, well, it's about 10 miles. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That is a wonderful story. And what a good idea. So, and how much are you in touch with him? How much does he just make decisions? And also, what are the economics of this?
Well, we had to make some changes to the homestead because, you know, if you're going to have 40 head of sheep and maybe a few cows out there, cattle out there, you need to have some water. You need to be having water available for them. So we had to put in some water lines. But we were able to get some smart money from, you know, from the government. If you're going to make changes, right now is a great time to do it because there are lots of government programs available. And there is money available to help make those changes. So that's been a challenge somewhat. And we work pretty closely with him. I talk to him at least once a month. And when we're out there, we always see him. And he tells us what his plans are. And, of course, we had to bring my sister in on some of the changes because it involved the homestead part of the land. So that's always a little tender, you know, because it can't stay looking like it always was if you're going to make some changes and add some water lines and maybe take down a tree, which is, you know, something you never want to do, but sometimes you have to. So.
Right. So I was going to ask also how it's all playing out in your family, and is everyone on the same page? And it sounds like maybe somewhat, but not totally.
Yeah, it's within our family. My husband and I are we bought into this early. I sort of convinced him early that of what we might be doing, I think. And then our kids love the idea. We have three kids, and they're all adults and interested in carrying this on when we're gone. My sister just is not interested in doing anything different. And that's, you know, we have to deal with that mm-hmm. way. But whenever you're dealing with land, and whenever it's land that you've had a part of, and it's your place, you know, it's the land that owns you, that's when it becomes an emotional issue, and mm-hmm. that it has been kind of sometimes for us an emotional issue.
Have you returned there and looked at it?
Yeah, we have been back, not since they did the water repairs. There's a little smoothing out that's going to have to be done, but you know, it's all things that I feel like we can work with.
Yeah.
You know, you put in some more trees and you just kind of get used to it. I'm really happy to think that there will be animals on the farm again.
Yeah.
Because for many years now there haven't been.
Yeah. And how are you, like, where are you getting your guidance on exactly what is appropriate for your land? And is that all from the Climate Land Leaders, or are you looking into other farming organizations or associations, or how are you figuring out what to do?
Well, mostly it is Climate Land Leaders, and we have just been blessed that group has so many people who have a wealth of information. Like this year, we put in around 600 CRP trees in a windbreak. And, of course, we couldn't have picked a worse time to do it because it's a drought and it's dry.
Mm.
And I don't know how many of them are going to survive. But, we have worked through that. We've worked through government agencies. We've read a lot. We've kind of learned along the way. And it's been the Climate Land Leaders has been just immensely helpful. Because
yes.
when we were putting in the CRP windbreak, we talked to a guy from St. Cloud who had done sort of the same thing. And he said, oh, well, you know, you need to be sure you use this, but you don't have to put on the tree tubes, and you don't have to do, you know, because he said you'll lose a few of them to the deer anyway, and, you know, but they will they'll come back. They come back, and so that's been helpful. Yeah, we've learned a lot, so much from climate land leaders. It's been really great.
And I'd imagine you also are, once you're actually doing the work, it's, you know, there's no perfect world, so you sort of get away from the idea of something perfect and just keep working with whatever is. And, you know, there's going to be some impact here and some impact there. I know I listened to a podcast yesterday about farming, and it talked about how important it was to just sort of have the plus and minus columns and to make sure the pluses can get bigger compared to the minuses, but you can't pretend there are no minuses in there. So maybe that's part of your reality too.
Yeah, we're really learning that this year because it's been so dry. We planted about 300 trees 2 years ago, and it was really dry. We could barely get a shovel into the ground, but then later in that season it did rain. And we were amazed at how many of those trees survived.
Oh, good.
So, you know, but then this year we're not sure what's going to happen, and it's a CRP windbreak. So are we going to have to replace those trees? I think we are.
Tell us what a CRP, what does CRP stand for?
Oh, it's Conservation Reserve Program.
Right.
So there's a cost share involved. You get these tiny little wisps of trees through the Soil and Water Conservation District office, and then you put them in the ground, and you put down tree mats around each one. So they will, you know, so whatever moisture is in the ground kind of stays there, and the weeds stay down around each tree. But yeah, there's a lot of money available through that reserve program right now, the CRP
yes.
reserve program. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what we did this time.
Yeah.
We felt we needed some guidelines.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, I hope that we'll be able to keep following up as you continue this journey. I think there are probably local listeners who can imagine themselves doing something like what you're doing, and it's just really good to have them see what connections are possible. Speaking with Meg Nielsen, I hope I pronounced your name correctly.
Yes.
And you are a owner of land in southern Minnesota, but a Wisconsin resident, not a farmer, but yet doing work on the land that's valuable and bringing it more to sustainability.
And can I sneak one more thing in?
Please.
The thing that people can do, I think, that want to do this, one of the important things they can do is to plant trees,
yes.
and plant trees that are indigenous to the area, you know, white oaks or red oaks or pin oaks or bur oaks or whatever. Start prairies. Stop using pesticides and herbicides. But the planting trees and the starting the prairies and putting roots in the ground, that's one of the most important things people can do if they're concerned about climate change.
Thank you. That's so true. I know that there's a goal of 1 million trees by 2040 in Minnesota, and that means 56,000 a year. And so there is a huge effort going on, and it really is going to take everyone taking part to make that happen. Wonderful. Well, we're out of time, Meg, but is there anything else that I forgot to ask you about or that you want to add?
No, I don't think so. We talked a little bit about a CRP wet prairie, but I don't think we have time to go into that. It's just getting some prairie plants in the ground that will hold water and, you know, keep your topsoil from washing away, especially in low areas that are highly erodible land that some lands are classified as that through your Soil and Water Conservation District
yes.
office.
And we have a wonderful Soil and Water office around here too, and a lot of forest issues as well, though there is still some, there are many farmers eking out a living on small parcels of land that I think where it's a little more similar to what you're talking about. Anyway, thank you so much again, Meg, and I'm hoping we'll have you again sometime. You take care.
All right. Thank you for having me on, and I hope people will Google Climate Land Leaders and learn more about that wonderful organization, too.
Wonderful.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. That was Meg Nielsen from the Climate Land Leaders.